I will call to order the public hearing for proposed local law number A of 2019, amending the county charter, section C-3002, providing for the appointment of the director of the Tompkins County Veterans Service Agency by the Tompkins County Administrator. Is there anybody here who would like to speak on that topic? Local law A. All right, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing and open the February 19th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion? Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Present.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne has asked to be excused. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
12 members present.
Thank you. I will be reordering things a little bit so that we can pick up the resolution out of the Housing and Economic Development Committee early in the meeting. I think the others involve staff and probably other staff who would be staying anyway. So, Johanna and Megan, hope we can move you up. We have privilege of the floor for the public. By signing your blue sheet, here are the rules. I agree to a three-minute time limit, and the clock is on the wall. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. The first speaker is Scott Noren and then Ariel Wisbaum.
Good evening. My name is Dr. Scott Noren. I think I forwarded these documents to you guys. If you haven't gotten it yet, she can forward it to you. But there's an article that came out back in 2014 that was an example of a case that went to DSS for attempted fraud. And that's kind of the subject of why I'm here tonight. So you know me as an oral and maxillofacial surgeon here in Ithaca. I discussed this scenario here with the Schuyler County Assistant DA, and his protocol there seemed to be entirely different and seemingly more in accordance with best practices. DSS called my office late November, early December 2018, and spoke to one of my employees about a typed document with my name used as a supportive narrative for a former employee of mine for heat benefits. To start, this is a violation of the former employee's privacy information by DSS divulging her file info. And actually, that was reiterated by the head of DSS that I talked to her today, Kit. I had no part in making of this document, making an attempted fraud, which is a Class A misdemeanor under New York state law. So there's two issues here. Ironically, DSS will not release this document to law enforcement, and the DA refuses to request it unless there is a grand jury subpoena, which he refuses to do as well. The end result is that violation of this person's privacy by DSS and the attempted fraud are being swept under the rug by DSS and the DA's office, seemingly at least. The DSS fraud division will not answer any simple questions now. I did get a call this morning from the head of DSS, like what the date of the original call was to my office. So now I have to go to the sheriff's office to request my own incoming phone records per spectrum. This whole matter is disturbing and a failure of our local prosecutor's office, in my opinion, to maintain the laws of the state. The DSS fraud division's divulgence of this information is a serious breach in the protocol in New York state law, which was reiterated again this morning. What became more disturbing is that once the knowledge of the illegal application for the heat benefits using my name as a vehicle to obtain them was indirectly released to me, there were major attempts to make this all go away. I'm asking for one or more legislatures to shine light on these two issues, the privacy breach and the attempted fraud minus the prosecution. I'm closing a copy of the case that happened several years ago, very similar, and yet was followed through by law enforcement and the prosecutor and the judicial system. And it seems, if you would see the article, it was pretty straightforward. I'm going to run out of time, but basically it's a good example of a very clear-cut case, and it was just smoothly handled. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott. Ariel Wisbaum and then Matthew Lutwin.
Hello, good evening. My name is Ariel Wisbaum, and I'm a law student at Cornell. I'm also a student attorney in the Farmworker Legal Assistance Clinic, and I'm here today speaking against the airport expansion in Tompkins County. I've worked closely with immigrant workers who are actively involved in making our community a better place and who form the backbone of New York's dairy industry, the largest sector in New York's agricultural economy. Their journeys are not disconnected from migrants and asylum seekers who are currently being turned away by Customs and Border Patrol at our southern border in violation of U.S. federal and international law. In January, myself, a group of law students, and three Cornell Law faculty members spent time working with migrants and asylum seekers in Tijuana, Mexico, and in the nation's largest family immigrant detention center in Dilley, Texas. We witnessed firsthand how the expansion of the immigration police state under the current administration has re-traumatized hundreds of asylum seekers and migrants who came to the United States escaping persecution and oppression. In Tijuana, after treacherous month or year-long journeys, migrants' first interactions with Customs and Border Patrol is a cold denial of entry. While a lawsuit against this procedure pends, migrants are still told they must wait in line in Tijuana for months before they have a chance to state a claim for entering the United States. In the conditions where they wait, there is scarce food and water, and the migrants are easy targets for persecutors from whom they escaped. Once the migrants finally have a chance to present themselves to Customs and Border Patrol, they're placed in an icebox, or hielera, which is a freezing concrete room where they're detained prior to being relocated to a different detention center, like the one where we worked at in Dilley, Texas. The women and children detained in Dilley, Texas, may be there for weeks before they have the opportunity to be released to a sponsor and stand before an immigration judge. Men will be detained for longer. And even once they are released, if they are released, they are forced to wear an ankle monitor so the state can track their location. After journeying for months, they are still not free. I share our interactions with the ever-expanding police state at the border here today to demonstrate why we should avoid such expansion in our own communities through the airport expansion. An expansion of CBP and ICE presence, which are undeniably linked to an airport expansion, will further re-traumatize migrants who contribute so much good to our upstate New York communities. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ariel. Matthew Lutwin and then Sherry Cortez.
Hi, my name is Matt Lutwin. I'm a third-year law student. I'm part of the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition, Surge Ithaca, and the National Lawyers Guild. Members of all those organizations are here today, and we're all thinking about what we need to do around this airport expansion, around ICE presence in Ithaca, and what sanctuary in Ithaca and Tompkins County really means. But first, I think we should be clear about what immigration official presence is. In the book Migra by Kelly Little Hernandez, she argues that the development of the Border Patrol is best understood as an intrinsically social and political process revolving around questions of violence and social order, rather than as a system of unmitigated responses to criminalized activity. This isn't a secret. Immigration officials not only break the rules of the Constitution, they upend people's lives every day. We need an honest dialogue about how to make sanctuary more meaningful in this county. To start, we should do the barest legal minimum in terms of following federal law, which jeopardizes the safety of immigrants. We should enact the most creative and effective, if indirect, policies that will increase the safety of immigrants. This may look like ending cash bail, decriminalizing more low-level offenses, improving access to legal resources. No doubt, several of these policies will have the twin effect of reforming the criminal justice system. We may ask, are our jails refusing to honor warrantless detainer requests by ICE? We should ask whether any immigrant in this community is scared to go to court, scared to reach out to county officials in whatever capacity, because one is too many. Trump's executive orders have broadened the scope of who can be detained, which has further driven a wedge between immigrants and basic essential services. They are foregoing screenings, medications, and other essential medical care. Parents have withdrawn children from federal nutrition programs to avoid scrutiny. And we know that traffic stops for immigrants have extraordinary implications. Supporting access to driver's licenses and other forms of identification here and statewide can mitigate this. What could increased Customs and Border Protection presence at the airport mean? Well, 2 years ago, these kinds of officers checked the identifications of deplaning passengers from a domestic flight. In a statement, CPB said, to assist our law enforcement partners, two CBP officers requested identification from those on the flight in order to help identify the individual. Similar procedures are done at bus stations, Amtrak platforms, subway systems. DHS official under anonymity said, when we're asked by our law enforcement partners to assist in searching for a person of interest, we are able to and will help. This isn't a new policy or related to any new executive order. So ICE and CBP do collaborate. They're under the same department. There's no reason to believe this isn't a possibility and that it is indeed likely. I don't think the county should facilitate the ballooning of immigration official presence here or anywhere, which is what will happen through this expansion. Tompkins County should not act as a force multiplier for DHS. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. I have Sherry Cortes and then Rye Bornstein.
Hi, I'm Sherry Cortes, Ithaca. I came to speak against the airport expansion again. I was here a few weeks ago. And the facility, the 5,000 square foot facility with the CPD, is just, I don't think it's necessary here. And in October of 2017, when you guys first discussed the airport, the option C that involved the minimum amount of work for the airport to remain functional was $5 to $6 million, staying as is. One of the big reasons this airport is being expanded is for Cornell, Global Cornell, because we met with the airport manager, and I appreciated his time and all the legislators and people that came to the meeting, but I'm still concerned because we have this memorandum of understanding that some people think that we can pull out of, but once we sign that, it's not going to be that easy. And Ithaca is not in a bubble by itself. We are in, you know, there's 50 states, and Donald Trump is the president. And the things that are going on right now, I don't even think we should be considering putting a facility here. And it's not going to benefit our people. We don't have a bus station any longer, but we're going to expand the airport. Why wouldn't we? I mean, we are low income, are people that don't have money. I can't fly out of Ithaca. The tickets are 300 more than flying out of a Rochester, and we have to drive to Rochester or Syracuse to fly out of here. And I only go home to visit family. That's another thing. I've cut my flying down because we are in environmental breakdown, and what we should be doing is preparing for what our community is going to do without fossil fuels. And airplanes are terrible. The enforcement issue is just, we're a sanctuary city, so those two things don't even match. I mean, how can you be a sanctuary city and build a Customs and Border Patrol with ICE agents? And we will have no control over the ICE agents, as we saw when they arrest them off our streets here. So I just think that if you could slow it down and maybe have a hearing where people could be informed about what's going on, as long, you know, I don't want the expansion, but at least let people know that, you know, what's going on with this expansion. All we know now is what we found out through reading. So I don't know. Thank you very much. And just slow everything down. Our development's getting out of hand, too. And I do think climate change is going to, again, it's going to affect us. So we need to start planning for that. And it would be good to mitigation and adaptation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Sherry. Rye Bornstein.
Hello. My name is Rye Bornstein. I'm born and raised Ithacan. I teach art. I recently relocated from New Orleans, where I've been living for the last 4 years. I wanted to speak about an issue that was raised about the ballooning of an infrastructure program into a security program and to bring a story from New Orleans about just that. There was a city service that was enacted a couple of years ago under the heading of the Palantir software, which some people might be aware of. It operates in a number of American cities. In New Orleans, which is a very small, liberal city inside of a very red state, it was applied to city services. What it was a network digital infrastructure to make collect contact data from where city residents were using city services. So city parks, garbage pickup, things like that. Unfortunately, the state, the red state around it, required that that same digital infrastructure be applied to crime and immigration enforcement. What ended up happening was that they needed points of data collection for that type of use of the infrastructure. So what was originally a fairly benign, fairly beneficial, fairly economically advantageous infrastructure project was recalibrated to be used for the purposes of the broader government's enforcement project. The proposed method of data collection for the digital networking was hundreds and hundreds of security cameras along the historic avenues of New Orleans. The people who are fighting that most right now are the Congreso de los Trabajadores, which is an undocumented people's union. It's working in New Orleans right now. Because as the plan has begun and as the cameras are being installed, ICE has moved their offices, upped their raids, and begun their deportations. And I have been at all of those. I've seen that happen. And I worked in those schools. So that data, that infrastructure, was originally intended to support me, and it ended up arresting my students. Your project is well-intentioned, and it will balloon into something that will be beyond your control. And I would ask you to stop it before it gets there. Thank you.
All right, before we go to the next part of our agenda, I have a couple of comments, and I wanted to ask Jason Molino to address folks as well, because I know often people speak and then leave, so I want to make sure people understand. One of the items that's on our that I hope we can add to the agenda tonight is a resolution submitted by Legislator Dawson. It's late submission, so we have to vote to add it. It's not automatically on the agenda. The title is Resolution Condemning President Trump's Declaration of a National Emergency and Urging Our Senators and Congressmen to Pass a Joint Resolution to Revoke It. So I just want to say you're preaching to the choir. We are with you on protection of immigrants. I just want to... All of us whose ancestors at some point were immigrants in this country have, I got to say, no right to say other folks can't come in. I also want to mention that in response to, we have good news from Catholic Charities, just came through. I saw a notice, we get emails all the time from the governor's office, I saw a notice about a month ago about a new grant opportunity for office. The state is funding new offices for New Americans, ONA, a new opportunity center. And there was going to be potential funding for a center fully funded by the state to be operated in for Tioga and Tompkins counties. I made sure that Kathy Schlatter saw this from the Human Services Coalition. She shipped it out to the couple of the nonprofits who might be qualified and eligible. Catholic Charities applied for the funding and just got word that they have been granted the full funding for this office to be to serve immigrant people who are coming into this country from other countries, contingent on final approval from the Office of the State Comptroller, but that should be fairly easy to get. The new office will be providing free naturalization and citizenship services in Tompkins and Tioga counties. All services will be free to people who come in, workshops on immigration law and federal immigration policy, informational seminars for new American populations on topics such as financial literacy, parent engagement in schools, and mental health protection, monthly immigration law consultation days where immigrants can access free legal consultations from an immigration attorney, and other services, including partnering with Tompkins Learning Partners to provide citizenship preparation services. We are doing everything we possibly can, and I want to urge people to pay attention to facts. Facts matter. There is such a thing as facts, despite the idea that some people in the federal government choose not to believe that. Facts do matter, and I would like people to understand that there's this is not the threat that you're being led to believe it is. So I really, really do. And if you are worried that climate change is exacerbated by plane travel, there's something called Seal the Cracks. It's very easy to offset your plane travel through Sustainable Tompkins. I urge you to do that. There's a calculator. It says how many miles are you flying. You can donate funds that then will get purpose to help people in our community to pay for insulation, new furnaces, that sort of thing. So that's an easy way to offset your carbon if you travel by plane. So if with that, I just wanted to make those couple of points. And I'd like Jason to take a moment to talk specifically about the customs facility. Sure. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you. There's been, I fielded several questions from legislators regarding two elements of this part of the project. One is regard to the MOU that has to be entered into. So the community requests that this facility be built there. It also has to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the federal government, setting parameters for how the facility is operated. The county is responsible for fees, is responsible for the costs related to the customs agent that's there. Those fees are generated through use of the facility, so it's a sustainable model. But the MOU itself has a 90-day out clause that can be executed without cause. So meaning it's a 90-day termination of the 90-day advance notice to terminate the memorandum of understanding with the federal government without cause, meaning at any point, at any time, this legislature can exercise that right to terminate its relationship and hence no longer having a custom facility or the facility being used for customs purposes. That is the ultimate authority in the agreement with the federal government that gives you total discretion as to when you want to, if should you want to terminate the relationship for whatever reason you would want to do that. It is there's no restriction upon that. There's other than the 90-day prior notice, no cause that has to be determined. So I think that's important to articulate when you talk about the boundaries of this memorandum of understanding and your authority to and flexibility to execute it or terminate it as you see fit. The other element has to do with security. And the airport and the ability for folks to access what we'll call, you know, my call talks about it behind the fence or on the opposite side of the fence, meaning the secure area of the airport. There is no access for anybody without going through a security clearance process to access or get behind the secure area of the airport. The only other way would be to be escorted by airport staff. To get security clearance, you have to go through an application process, which requires a security check as well as justification, amongst many other things, in the FAA regulatory process to get a security clearance. If reasons to gain security clearance would be associated with immigration enforcement, that would trigger, obviously, questions on our end, which would then bring it to this body as to why would we want to grant security clearance to anyone to exercise those activities. This legislature in 2017 gave very clear direction through resolution as to how all county employees would address immigration issues, taking the least amount of proactive effort under a federal law to do so. So it's given guidance to our employees as to how we would handle those matters. The second piece is that if you were to be escorted by an airport employee is how you could get beyond the security checkpoint. Just to give you a little scope, order of magnitude. This includes federal, state, and local employees. So, for example, when the governor comes to visit and state troopers want to get behind the fence, they have to be escorted by airport staff to do so. They cannot go freely. They don't have access to it. It all has to go through a certain FAA regulatory process. So from a security perspective, that's how security works to gain access to the facility or would gain access to a facility beyond or inside the fence versus outside the fence security. Those are two questions that have come up by legislators that I wanted to answer. Also, just as far as a perspective with respect to agencies, federal agencies, under the Department of Homeland Security. TSA is already at the airport, and they are an agency under Homeland Security as well. And they're functioning, doing their responsibilities with respect to checking passengers and checking identification of passengers. So those are two questions I've received several times, as is my call. I just wanted to clarify those points for the legislature.
So just to be clear, an ICE agent can't walk up and say, I'm a federal agent, and push aside any other local security or the customs people or anything?
They cannot.
They cannot. All right, I'll let a couple of other blue sheets in, and then we're going to move on. Ruth Yarrow and then Stephanie Heslop. Ruth?
What we're asking you is something difficult, and we're asking it of ourselves also, which is to think outside the boxes that we're in, our middle class box, our white privilege box, when we make decisions. An example is the jail for the county, which is way up on Warren Road. It used to be downtown where people could reach it. When it was put up there, there was no effort to make sure that people who had loved ones in the jail that I know of, that they could get up there. So OAR and a team of some 15 of us volunteers drive people up to the jail to see their loved ones. They can take the bus and then walk quite a ways, but the bus doesn't go at the times when they have to be there in order to get in. When we're thinking about it seems on the surface of it, oh, yeah, we could put it up there. It's cheaper, you know, nice, make a nice big facility. Or we can expand the airport. It will help Cornell. What I'm asking of you and of us, the whole community, is when we make decisions, think of everybody. And think especially of those who are unlikely to speak up about their needs. This is a hard thing to do. Our country hasn't done this very well for several centuries, but it's about time. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephanie Heslop and then Amanda Kirch-Gessner.
I got on a bus in Buffalo this morning and woke up in Rochester to a bus full of Customs and Border Patrol agents. And I had a moment of freak out myself because I realized that I didn't have any identification on me. Luckily, nobody asked me for anything. It was the brown men on the bus that they wanted to talk to. But it just seems to me like really wishful thinking to tell yourselves that giving Customs and Border Patrol a base in Tompkins County is not going to increase people's risk. I mean, they have just snatched people off the street, and I don't know how you can tell the immigrant community here that, like, oh, don't worry about it because we can cancel the MOU or whatever. So that's one thing. Another thing is we are facing climate catastrophe. Like, we are making the planet unable to support life. And while putting some money into a fund to offset your flying, like, that's better than not doing anything. But flying has a massive carbon footprint. And, I mean, charter flights are, like, are you kidding me? This is a massive carbon footprint, and I just don't even understand. Like, you all, you're mostly Democrats, right, who call yourselves progressive and environmentalists. Like, we cannot be subsidizing an airport expansion that is only going to benefit wealthy people, really, because who takes charter flights? And please don't say that this is going to help everyone because trickle down is discredited Republican ideology. Like, I'm sorry, Republicans, but it's true. So really, I don't know what people are thinking, but this is a disaster for many reasons. Thank you.
The last speaker is Amanda Kirch-Gessner.
Good evening. I'm here tonight to ask you, who do you serve? Do you serve the billionaire in our community, or do you serve the people? There's a billionaire who wants an airport expansion, and there's a bunch of people who can't even get on the bus anymore. So priorities, people, and the priorities should be people. The $8 million in local funds you want to dedicate to the airport expansion could build 400 second wind style cottages. We could solve our homeless crisis and provide more emergency housing for people who fall on hard times, whether it be a fire that breaks out in one of these large buildings that's going up, you name it. But we could have places to put people in an emergency. And we could be prepared with the $8 million you want to spend on that. I think climate change is a very real threat, and that's something that affects all of us in this room and across this planet. And we're in one of the few places on the planet where we can actually grow enough food to feed the people here. So we need to be thinking about protecting the people who are picking our food. We really need to be thinking about the people that we serve. Now, you can all call yourselves environmentalists and vote to expand an airport where, according to Mr. Hall on December 27th at a Transportation Committee meeting, he's working with Cornell students to bring in 20-seat or less planes to avoid TSA security entirely so people can travel, this says even to Toronto, so internationally without having to go through security. Or we could just bring it back to reality and start investing in local infrastructure that will help local people. How about some bus routes to Syracuse or Rochester where people can actually get on a plane and go somewhere? It costs way too much to fly out of this airport to make it reasonably economically feasible for the most middle class of people in this community. Okay? I think we really just need to check ourselves. Like Sherry was saying, just slow down. 90 days isn't that long when you enter a memorandum of understanding, especially for how quickly government moves. And I hope you take it for the joke that it is, because government doesn't typically move that quickly, except for when it benefits wealthy people. Then it moves really, really fast. Okay? So there's a billionaire that you can serve. I mean, they can dig up their synchrotron and move if they want to, or you can actually focus on helping the people here. $8 million, 400 second wind style cottages, our homeless crisis solved. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to say one other thing. If this is out of order, I'm sorry. I think we've all had it way up to here with the fear-mongering from Washington. Fear-mongering comes from all sides. This is not what you... This is not a dangerous facility. It is under our control. It is what Jason has said is, what Mike Hall has said, and you're smiling, Josh, but, you know, Mike Hall reached out to you several times, and you never answered him, so... We all have a responsibility here that includes to actually listen to each other and to actually pay attention to the facts.
11 years ago.
The facts are that this is a facility where nobody can get in without passing security. Period. And there will not be tolerance of ICE coming through this customs facility, period, We have no control over what they're already doing on the roads, and they don't need a 5,000-square-foot office in order to do what they're already doing. And we oppose what they are already doing. Please help us fight that fight. This is not the fight that any of us needs. All right. I saw Duxon walk in from the city of Ithaca. Where's Duck? Are you here? Hey, Duck. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
Good to have you here.
There's a lot of planning stuff going on. I'm not on the planning committee, but I pay attention, obviously. So INHS unveiled their Immaculate Conception plans for 70-some rental units and 7 for-sale townhomes and single-family homes. So I'm pretty excited about that. This is a little different from their prior projects in that they're aiming to go as low as 30% AMI. Usually they aim for 50 to 80. So they're going a little lower than usual. We're continuing to work on the green building policy. It's a city-town joint effort to codify the green building policy that we adopted last year and turn it into code. The Greater Southside Neighborhood Plan is moving to council, so that's an extension of the comprehensive plan. Phase 2, going neighborhood by neighborhood, so Southside is one of the first neighborhoods to get that treatment, and so that identifies places where we can increase housing density and parts that should remain the same, mostly the residential areas. Last week at planning committee, they discussed better enforcement of, tenants' rights, properties with expired certificates of compliance, being able to increase those fines and more easily prosecute landlords who violate those rules and force them to pay for housing for displaced tenants. So that moved forward. They discussed the intercity bus situation on Green Street. So the issue there is most of the time it works well, and I've taken the bus from there, and it's nice to have it more accessible than the West End was. But at peak times when students are coming in or out of Ithaca during the holidays or at the end of breaks, that's when we start seeing issues. And then one provider in particular tends to flout the rules and park in TCAT's bus lane or unload passengers on the traffic side of the street. And so we are looking at dealing with them very specifically, since they're the most egregious of the operators. The city is kicking off a Vision Zero initiative. So Vision Zero means targeting zero deaths from traffic-related crashes. Part of that effort will involve asking the state legislature to allow municipalities like the city of Ithaca to set a lower minimum speed limit than we're currently allowed, or that is, we are not allowed to set a minimum citywide speed limit. The state likes to have municipalities consistent, I guess, as you drive from town to village to city. But in the service of safety, we'd like to be able to go down to as low as 20 miles an hour citywide. And staff is looking at infill development guidelines. So over the past year, there's been some controversial infill developments at Northside and Fall Creek and South Hill. So one of the priorities for the planning department this year is to decide what kind of infill is desirable and what isn't and provide some kind of guidelines behind that. So that's just starting.
Thanks very much, Doug. Good to hear from you. Any questions? Mike Sigler.
Did you just say you're trying to get a 20 miles per hour speed limit citywide?
It might be 25 and 20 in certain places, but yes. You look displeased.
Would that be for bicycles as well?
I knew you were going to.
Sure, I'll take that.
No.
Any other questions? Duck, where is the, did we ask, because I asked George last time about the waterfront plan. What's happening with that?
So the zoning is complete for the waterfront. And then the next step will be design guidelines, similar to the college town and downtown design guidelines. So they're more aesthetic in nature than the zoning is. But notably, the goal for zoning going forward will be to have something more form-based, or at least a hybrid type of approach, so that the form and appearance of a building is part of the zoning process.
And is there a timeline to be finished?
I don't know offhand, but they do want it soon since there are multiple projects moving forward, including a Vecino affordable housing project.
All right. We were told last summer it would be 2 months. That was the middle of last summer, but okay. Anybody else? Mike?
Just another question about the zero deaths that you were talking about. I mean, it seems to me that sometimes just the bike safety laws in this city are not enforced at all. And just, I mean, there's this one guy, if you're watching, you ride your bike the wrong direction down East Shore Drive, in all dressed in black in the winter. That's just bad idea. People cannot see you. So I wanted to see if the city would be doing anything to kind of say, hey, here's an idea. Like, you are supposed to have bike lights on your bike. And, you know, even though it's kind of like when I learned to ride a motorcycle. My brother said, it doesn't matter if you're right. You're dead. And I don't know. I don't know why more people aren't taught that lesson, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, we try to promote safety, and Bike Walk Tompkins educates on that topic as well.
Okay. Thank you. That was my rant today.
All right. Anybody else? All right. One more so you don't get off too easily. How about Stewart Avenue? Any news?
No. So we continue to not get any state or federal funding for that. But it is built in to this year's budget to maybe study how to break down rebuilding it ourselves in phases over many years. So if we have to, then we will pay for it ourselves over a long time frame.
Good. I mean, we study it this year. You know, I think that Cornell has offered multiple hundreds of thousands to support the reconstruction. I know Svante knows that. So I
don't know details about that.
Okay. Well, they have. So, all right. We're all looking forward to that. Annie?
Thanks for your report, Duxton. I had a question about the INHS project. I'm not sure if you can answer this, but I'm glad to hear that they're accepting applicants below 30% AMI. So by my calculations, it should be people earning less than $20,000 a year. Do you know if that's for the rentals or for the townhomes?
I don't know. Probably the rentals. And, yeah, 30% AMI for a single person is like $17,000 or $18,000.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
The director of INHS is in the audience, and she's nodding. Thanks, Johanna. All right. Thanks very much, Doug. Appreciate your being here. Oh, I'm sorry, Henry.
Doug, I have two quick questions. One, what are you at with Lime Scooters? And two, where are you at with the hiring of the DPW teams?
I don't know. So to help with the cost of hiring that second, both the water and street crews, they weren't going to be hired until March. So it would be three quarters of the year rather than a full year. And so I assume that process has started, however, so that they will be hired in time for March. As far as scooters go, so you know we have these new commissions. The Mobility Accessibility Transportation Commission has been tasked with studying scooters, you know, throughout the country and figure out what's best for our community. So they will be presenting their findings soon, and then we'll act on that.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. We'll say that the partnership that we have with the city, county, and town on the hiring. Jason, help me out with the we're hiring what? The public works apprenticeships. I heard from Shelley Michelle Nunn that they've been hired, and she was delighted with the applicant pool and sort of we're going to try to find places for the additional people that they couldn't hire on the initial nine, right?
Yes, I believe they'll be starting in the next 2 weeks or so, around the 1st of March. Had a good applicant pool, very diverse applicant pool, so I think to date the intentions of the program have hit its milestone so far, and we'll see them starting March 1st, one in a town, city, and county, and rotating for 3 months. I think it'll be interesting to watch this program progress. So far, so good.
Right. So we'll take that back. We're really pleased that that's going forward. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Thanks. We appreciate it. Legislator, privilege of the floor. Deborah.
Well, I just want to share a couple of fun facts, three or four, that I've learned since I've been serving on the legislature. One of which is that, as the law currently stands, the county cannot spend money to build housing. I hope people are listening. A second fun fact, the county can't spend money to establish bus service between cities. Another fun fact, the county sheriff, and in fact, no county official, can tell a deputy that they cannot call ICE. And a fourth fun fact, these planes from overseas, they're coming anyway. The question is, are they going to have to land in New York or Philadelphia or Washington and go through customs before they come to Ithaca? And so that brings up the final fun fact, which is that planes use quite a bit more fuel taking off than they do once they achieve cruising altitude. So I hope people will just consider all these fun facts as they evaluate the soundness of the decisions that have to be made. Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. And on the housing issue, people might go, what? The county does spend money. The county spends federal money on housing. And we have been struggling for more than a year to figure out a way to get the permission, legal authority, to spend local money on affordable housing. And Housing and Economic Development Committee is going to take that up again this year. And I think our initiative is going to turn into seeking a local law, a home rule law at the state level. That means going to the trouble of asking the state of New York to give us the legal permission to spend money on local money on housing. So this is, everything is more complicated than you think. So thank you, Deborah. Those are really important points. Somebody else, Annie?
I want to thank folks, members of the public that came and spoke. I know for a lot of people it's not a really fun thing to do is go out and do public speaking, so I take that, and it's not easy for me also, and so I take that to heart that for most folks this is something that's really got to be bothering you and you're something you're very concerned about to come and speak to us, so thank you. As far as the airport official, they're going to be hiring a customs person, and some people are calling it a border official or an immigration official, and it is going to be a customs official only. And the other issues, I just wanted to make a couple of announcements that on the 28th of February, so that's next Thursday at the library downtown at the Borg Warner Room, there's going to be a presentation called Combating a Climate of Hate, and everybody is invited to attend, and it's free. And some of the topics that we're going to be talking about, I'm going to be one of the speakers, and some of the topics we're going to be talking about are racism, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, homophobia, xenophobia, and political violence. And so we welcome everybody to come to that. And then 2 days before that, on the 26th, at 10 o'clock in the morning, we're going to be the Ag and Farm Committee of the county is, and also Cornell Cooperative Extension is sponsoring a forum. It's called Climate Smart Farming, and it's 10 a.m. Tuesday in Dryden at the VFW, which is 2272 Dryden Road, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lunch is provided, and if anybody wants to come, you can sign up online. Cornell Cooperative Extension, the price is $10, and it includes a lunch.
Thank you, Annie. Anybody else? Mike Lane.
Looking over my papers here, I could probably spend about an hour talking about different topics, but I just want to mention a couple of things. One of them is, I put in everybody's box, the economic impact statement that we received from Cornell University. I thought it had some interesting information on it. This was handed out at a meeting at the Tompkins County Chamber. And it brings to head what an institution like Cornell University does for our economy. And you can tie that into the airport. You can tie it into a lot of things. But Cornell has, and these figures are approximate, they have 23,263 students. They have 9,870 employees. Their payroll is $986 million. These are 2018 figures. Student spending is estimated at $221 million locally. Visitor spending at $75 million. Purchasing in Tompkins County and adjacent counties, they think, is around $178 million. Construction spending in Tompkins County and adjacent counties, $53 million. Local contributions to governments like the Ithaca City School District, nonprofit organizations, and public transit support, $7.93 million. Property taxes generated. Yes, Cornell does pay taxes on some of its properties, $3.6 million. Municipal fees, such as sewer, water, and other fees, stormwater in the city, for example, $3.5 million. External federal, state, and corporate research funding spent locally, $334 million. Cornell's United Way's share of countywide campaign and Cornell's gold, 40% of the goal, about $750,000. Venture capital raised in 2018 by companies, $22 million, and from the Cornell's McGovern Family Center for Venture Development, $13.9 million. I think we don't often think about the money that an institution like Cornell generates locally enough. Cornell is often criticized. From time to time, I've been a critic. But on the whole, thank goodness we have Cornell University here, because it provides the engine that makes us the one county in upstate in this region that is moving forward, gaining population, and being able to see growth in the downtown area and in our industrial development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Anybody else? Okay, just a couple things from my report. I already mentioned the Catholic Charities new service that will be starting soon. They already do have a robust program for immigrant services. So in terms of this community, I hope people will make sure to refer anybody in need to Catholic Charities, which is non-denominational. Their services are entirely for anybody who presents at the door. I will also want to mention that Law New York has hired the person that the new position that we funded on a three-year basis, Barbara Caspian. Is that right, Shauna? Caspian?
Kazian.
Kazian, okay. Kazian will be the new person working on homelessness prevention at Law New York, and we're looking forward to seeing the results from her work. And next Tuesday, a few of us are going to Albany. Katrina McCloy in our office tried to get meetings here with our senators and our assemblywoman. We were told we could, like the very end of March, which is too late for any kind of budget you know, any impact on the budgets. It seemed like that was going to be not very useful. But we did get an offer of a meeting with Senator Seward in Albany next Tuesday. So we used that as a hook, and we've now got meetings with Senators Seward, Helming, and O'Mara. And we're working on meetings with the two judiciary chairs, Jeffrey Dinowitz in the Assembly and Brad Hoylman in the Senate, so that we can push our urge, you know, our need for a third county court. We also have at least one meeting on the second floor with the governor's office with Kelly Cummings, who's the chief of state operations, and the new secretary, deputy secretary for energy and the environment named Dale Brick. So we'll be talking about a range of issues with all of them. Jason's going, I'm going, Shauna and Rich are going, and we'll certainly look for, and I'll send out a note just reminding you if you have issues that you would like us to have on the list as we put that together this week, that'd be great. So that's next Tuesday. That's my report. Is there any questions? All right, thank you. County Administrator Jason Molino.
Thank you, Martha. Several things to update you on. First is I'll be requesting that you consider confirming an appointment for the Youth Services Director. If there's interest, I can definitely go to executive session to talk more about the candidate. If not, I would request that that you consider her confirmation today. A little background about the process, though, first. Had a good formal process with several agencies that work hand-in-hand with the Youth Services Department, and as well as Anna Kellis from the legislature and several department heads to join the interview process. Did a good search, had roughly over 25 candidates apply, ranked those candidates, narrowed it down to about six, of which we then had phone interviews. Those phone interviews resulted in three finalists to be selected. If there are interest, we can go into executive session at the end of the meeting. No? Then I would request that you confirm the appointment of Kate Shanks Booth to be the next director of Youth Services. Kate has been the executive director for the Women's Opportunity Center for the past 2.5 years here in Ithaca, right across the street. Prior to that, she worked several years with the in the village of Cayuga Heights, an after-school program for children. And prior to that, worked for Community Action out of Missouri youth-related programming. So all in all, over 10 years of experience in working with youth. Went through a rigorous process, and I'm appointed her and recommending that you confirm her.
Thank you very much, Jason. Any questions? Would somebody like to make that motion? Moved by Anna, second by Rich. Any discussion? Anna.
I actually just wanted to welcome Kate. You definitely impressed everyone on the search committee, and your dedication and passion for this work was very evident. I look forward to working with you. So, welcome.
Anyone else? Should we hear from Kate before we vote or after? All right, all in favor of Kate Shanks Booth's appointment to Youth Services Director, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Kate. Come on up and say a few words.
Hi, I'm Kate. I am so grateful and honored to have this opportunity to serve Tompkins County and to work alongside great people who are doing great things in our community. I've long had a passion for youth services, and I really look forward to moving things forward in our community and our county.
Thanks so much. Thank you. Great. Okay. Thank you, Jason. You have other items?
I do. Welcome, Kate. Look forward to working with you. Thanks for joining us tonight. Several items just to let you know now that tonight, should you pass the resolution regarding the changes to the charter with respect to the Veterans Service Agency, we will shortly in the next week begin advertising for the position, go through a similar process, get a good group of stakeholders together, and then advertise, interview, and hopefully have something in the next month or two in front of you. 30-day budget amendments by the governor released on February 15th. I have reached out to NISAC and still waiting for a full brief. There's vagueness in terms of the information that's been provided public as to what some of those amendments include. Two that I am aware of is there has been an increase or there has been an appropriation of funds for early voting and some of the voting requirements or changes that were that took place just prior to the budget being released. I believe about $7 million countywide. Countywide. That would be nice. Statewide, I will tell you that I recently met with both the election commissioners, Elizabeth and Stephen, talking about what these election changes mean, what these laws mean. They right now are meeting with multiple vendors with respect to electronic polling books, as that seems to probably be a necessity of upgrade in order to do early voting effectively and efficiently. They've met with several vendors. They continue to meet with more vendors and are just continuing to educate the public as they become educated on the changes that have come out. I would imagine the next 90 days the state is going to either have to certify electronic polling books to see if anyone can purchase them in time for this general election. There is a possibility they may not be here for this general election, so they'll have to do early voting without them, but that is yet to be determined. The other item in the budget amendments are changes to AIM-Aid. I believe Legislator Lane has a resolution to be introduced with respect to opposing these changes. A little refresh on the original budget that was proposed. The governor took out around $60 million of AIM-Aid. AIM-Aid is aid to municipalities, primarily to village. It is to only village, cities, and towns. This stripped most of the aid from most village and towns. A good portion of it from most village and towns, and maintain city funding for AIM-Aid. Obviously, that amount of money results, I believe, in over $300,000 of lost revenue to towns and villages just in Tompkins County alone. The revised budget, or I shouldn't say revised budget, the budget amendments that were proposed last week included a restoration of that aid. However, with a catch in that it would be taken from, the revenue would be taken from county sales tax shares generated from the internet sales tax should that measure be passed in the adopted budget. So if the legislature adopts the internet, allowing for internet sales tax to be collected, then the county portion of that would be going to restoring AIM-Aid. Obviously, for multiple reasons, first and foremost, that this sets a very, very heavy precedent in the state mandating county revenues to essentially uphold state-funded obligations. That is the one major issue I think we see. Otherwise, it completely ties any funding restoration to another measure in the state budget, which is also complicated. I believe the resolution that's being proposed is in opposition of this. We would be the first county to pass this opposition, both of the original proposed budget and then the amended budget as well. Those are the only two items I'm aware of right now that have significant impact. But like I said, I did reach out to Dave Lucas and NYSAC. They're still putting together an assessment and trying to understand all of the elements in the amended budget. When that comes out, I will share that with the legislature as well and then dig into it further to see what the direct impact, if any, it has on us. But as you know, the temperature in Albany is a little different now with some changes, so it'll be a different budget process as it has been so far, and we're all learning as we go through this. Those are the only updates I have, unless there's any questions.
Any questions for Jason? Annie.
I don't know if it's so much a question. It might just be a comment, but it sounds like the state is saying that they will allow the assistance to the municipalities to be restored if the counties pay for it.
A roundabout, it's taking what would otherwise be county revenue and carving it out for the municipalities to restore funding that would otherwise have been provided by the state.
Thank you.
I think one reason the language in Mike's resolution about a dangerous precedent or something like that is that even if this is a relatively small amount of money, everything's relative, but the worry is that this sets a precedent that says county sales tax that's supposed to come to counties is available to New York State to pay for other things. You may have heard over the years Governor Cuomo saying that sure, we could take over the local share of Medicaid. We could take it out of your sales tax revenue, which that's just got those two cups. You know, you move the money around. It's not actually the state paying for the local share. So the worry is if this goes through, it's just the beginning of a wholesale shift. So, Henry, did I see your hand up? Okay. Anything else? Thanks very much, Jason. Appreciate that. Jonathan Wood, county attorney.
Just a couple things. One, I gave update on litigation, so please feel free to ask any questions you want of me. I do have one comment based on what I heard. As you probably know, in early December, I went to Belize. I flew from Ithaca Airport. Round trip from here to Belize was $400. It was half as much as I could find any place else. So I would certainly advise people to check the price of flights from Ithaca before assuming that it's way cheaper in other places, because it's often not. And that's my report.
Thank you, Jonathan. A good tip. Any questions? All right, Rick Snyder, finance director.
Thank you, Martha. In your packets tonight, or in your red folder, there's a copy of a finance report. This worked well last time when I had some numbers to share with you, so I wanted to provide this finance report because it talks about the sale of our bands that took place on January 31st. It also talks about the sale of our bonds. Both of these debt issuances come to fruition tomorrow, and we actually receive the money, so I thought this would be a good time to review these three different debt issuances at total $14.5 million. The first item under bands shows what we sold the bands for, and the first band was $3.4 million. That's our Series A band, and that band sold at a net interest rate of 1.9546% to Oppenheimer & Company. Has, of course, both of these bands have a maturity of 1 year. That's what we always do each year when we just do short-term notes. There were five bidders with competitive bids for this particular series. And for the next series band, which was our airport band, Series B, we only had three bidders. That band sold at a net interest rate of 2.065. So you can see that the net interest rate for both of these was right around 2%. The note closing was held on February 6th in the county attorney's office here, and like I said before, the delivery date when we actually get the money is tomorrow. For comparison, I shared with you the last six or seven years of where we've been in the short-term debt issuances, and it goes all the way from a really low rate of only about 0.18% back in July of 2014 up to this much higher rate based on market factors that were that are in existence right now. The short end of the curve is much steeper, and we're coming in at around 2%. You can see just the last 2 years, they came in at 1.59%, 1.34%. So steadily over the years, our short-term borrowing has gone up, which is not the case for the bonds, which is in our next section here. We did get a reaffirmed Moody's bond rating for AA1 stable, which was the same as what we had prior to the bond rating this year. We sold $3.5 million of these serial bonds, and the net interest rate was 2.178. We had seven bidders on this sale, which is one more bidder than we had last year or the year before. The term of the bonds is 10 years, which is relatively short for a borrowing, but if you look down at the table immediately below, you can see that the last 3 or 4 years, the bond issues were only 10 or 11 years, and the net interest rate at around 2.2% is very close to where it's been the last 2 years. So when you see short-term rates at 2% and long-term rates at 2.2%, you can see it's fairly flat. As the short-term rates have gone up, but the long-term rates have not gone up in the same fashion. If you're interested in what this provided for, these long-term bonds, you can flip the page and see on the back an excerpt that comes directly from the bond prospectus, and you can see that basically they're a bunch of road and bridge projects. If you divide them up about 50-50, about half the money is going to various bridge projects such as Dodge Road, Mallaryville, Red Mill, and various bridge improvements. The other half of the money is going to various road improvements. So that's how we financed about $3.5 million worth of long-term bonds. And I entertain any questions you might have.
Anybody? Mike Sigler.
Can I ask a silly question? You're going to go to bed, and you're going to wake up in the morning, and you check the account, and boop, there's like $10 million there.
No, I'll get a couple phone calls tomorrow. There are wires that will come in, and I'll have to confirm those wires. I wish it was that simple, but it is an easy transaction after all the pre-closing documents have been signed and all the CUSIPs have been issued over the last few weeks. All the paperwork and all the real hard work has been accomplished. I just have to wait for those wires to come tomorrow.
We get it in 10s and 20s, too.
Unmarked bills.
Anything else for Rick?
And then I have one more item,
sure,
real quick.
Yeah.
I'm proud to announce that we have hired our Deputy Director of Finance. His name is Andrew Breiman. Andrew comes from Painted Post, New York. And we followed a selection routine, very much what Jason just illustrated with the hiring of the youth director. We went through the same process with the phone interviews and selecting candidates and having the in-face interviews with a really good committee that consisted of folks from county administration, from the HR department. Mike Lane was on the committee, and Andrew was notified about it was a week ago Friday, and he said he could start on Monday the 25th, which is just next week. So I'm real excited about him coming. He has a very varied background, which I think will be utilized a lot here because we do a lot of different types of accounting and different types of projects. He's worked at the Kennedy Valve Company, which was manufacturing background. He's also worked at the Rockwell Museum there in Corning, and he's worked at the ARC of Schuyler County. So altogether, he has way over 20 years of nonprofit accounting experience, which is not quite the same as government, but it's about as close as you're going to get in a lot of cases. Working with the nonprofit orientation, I think, is going to be a valuable and a really close fit for what he'll be doing here in the Tompkins County Finance Department. He has a bachelor's degree in accounting, and he's familiar with many different softwares, having worked in a number of different places, which is important to us because we're always looking at new software, we're always converting the software, and he's actually led some management teams going through major software conversions. So I hope to bring Andrew to one of our forthcoming meetings here for the legislature so you can all get to meet him. And like I said before, I'm really happy to bring this report to you tonight.
Thank you so much, Rick. That's great. Congratulations. Mike Lane.
You're going to bring him in to introduce him?
I will. If it's not the next meeting, it'll be the one right after.
He doesn't want to scare him right off.
It was a very good process, Rick. And for anybody wondering, we did check, and the ARC of Schuyler County is not about climate change.
Appalachian Regional.
Right over your head. I'm sorry.
ARC. I know it's not Appalachian Regional Commission. It's a.
Oh, it's for people with disabilities.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks so much, Rick, and congratulations. And we look forward to meeting Andrew. Thank you very much. Just one quick other thing I forgot in my report. I've sent out an email to all of you about meeting of. committee chairs and vice chairs and the couple of other legislators who aren't in that category to first of all talk about process and setting goals for the year. I sent that out, I think, last night or this morning to see if we can find an optimal time. And I know a few people have already responded. Look forward to having that meeting soon. So I hope you'll check that email and put in your availability. Thank you very much. All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's start with Mike Lane and then Deborah.
I'd like to add Resolution J, resolution opposing the proposed and amended 2020 executive state budget impacting aid and incentives to municipalities and county sales tax revenues. So moved.
Is there a second? Second by Deborah. This requires 10 votes to put it on the agenda. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Mike, let's do that under your budget report.
Sure.
Okay. And then you have another one. Is it just you got changes for GEO?
I was going to pull that off the.
And then move that as a substitute, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pull it off the consent agenda.
All right. Deborah.
Yes, I'd like to add resolution number K, ID number 8436, resolution condemning President Trump's declaration of national emergency and urging our senators and congressmen to pass a joint resolution to revoke it.
Is there a second? Second by Shauna. All in favor of adding this to the agenda, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. That would normally go under member filed at the end of the meeting. Sort of feel like some members of the public are interested in hearing that conversation. So let's do the consent agenda, then we'll do Deborah's, and then we'll take the housing and economic development agenda item, resolution I. Okay? All right, consent agenda, just please shout out if you have something to come off. Resolution A, Mike? Approval of
off, please.
Succession, that comes off as it is. Resolution B, adoption of list of designated officers and employees required to file an annual financial disclosure form. ID 8396, Resolution C, resolution to update the administrative policy manual, policy 0108, dues, memberships, and subscriptions, policy 1146, exclusion screening, and policy 0140, public statements about county business, ID 8397. And D, Resolution D, approval of revised bylaws, Public Information Advisory Board, ID 8401. And I have some appointments. To the Historical Commission, Marsha Lynch and Raymond Wheaton. To the Youth Services Board, Peter Angie. And to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Marsha Lynch and Anna Kellis. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Dan, seconded by Annie. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. All right. Deborah, would you go ahead with Resolution K?
Thank you, Martha. Yes, I don't know where to start.
Well, just start by reading the title and moving it.
Oh, all right. Well, I can do that. So we're back to Resolution Number K, ID 8436, Resolution condemning President Trump's declaration of a national emergency and urging our senators and congressmen to pass a joint resolution to revoke it.
Seconded by Anna. Deborah, you want to speak first?
Yes. So I tried to make this as non-political as I possibly could. I do not see this particular resolution as taking a position on immigration and how it should be handled, other than to say that if the if a president is going to declare a national emergency, it should be factually supported. And if he's going to declare a national emergency and invoke 10 U.S.C. 2808, it should be a national emergency that actually requires the use of the armed forces, which the national emergency asserted in the proclamation does not. Since it does not require the use of the armed forces and it seeks to build a wall using money for military construction, and this construction is not construction carried out with respect to a military installation, it would appear that he can't use money for the wall under this declaration. And finally, to use a declaration of emergency in order to circumvent Congress, which has already voted not to give him the money that he's seeking to use, would seem to be extremely threatening to our constitutional framework of separation of powers, and we should all be against that. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Anyone else? Anna?
I just wanted to thank Deborah for putting this together. It's extremely thorough. And as a lawyer, obviously, you could do things that many of us could not do. So I appreciate it. And the only thing I would add to it is just the cost of doing this and where that money could go, and in, as far as the things that are needed within the country, services, supports that are being cut, I mean, endlessly that we could go on. It just seems a waste.
Mike Lane.
Reminded of the fable about the boy who cried wolf too many times. And in my mind, I'd want to know what a real emergency is. I think that's what the declaration of a state of emergency should be. It's being criticized because our president is saying that he really didn't need to do this. I equate it with the process that was used at the state by Governor Cuomo a few years ago to declare a message of necessity to put through the SAFE Act, for example. Let's reserve these kinds of things for real emergencies.
Thank you. Mike Sigler.
I'll be longer. Sorry. You know, I've said this before, that Tompkins County, it's the one place where you, I think, on the legislature, you need a foreign policy to actually run for office here. And I actually see that again here, so that's good. You know, I don't know if you know this about me. I really like continuing education. You know, I recently took the hunter safety course to get my hunting license. And, you know, you always get a big takeaway. And the big takeaway from there was don't shoot anybody. I mean, everything you learn, don't shoot anybody. I learned to fly. You know, I got my pilot's license. You learn a lot about stall recovery. And that's basically when you lose lift and the plane falls from the sky. And the big takeaway is don't stall the aircraft. You just don't do that. After reading through this resolution, my big takeaway is that the sponsor and many of those speaking out against this declaration don't think there really is an immigration problem at the border and that illegally entering the country shouldn't really be addressed. I'm not saying that everyone crossing the border, the southern border, is out to do the U.S. harm. I don't think that they're mostly out to deal drugs or basically create mayhem. You know, I think that's a very small percentage of the population there that want to do that. You know, I wrote an article about this, that 5% of any group of people is probably out to do you harm, you know, whether it be police or whether it be teachers or 5%. So it's a small percent. However, it's a small percent of a big number. I would think that if there were 400,000 people a year arriving at JFK Airport and rushing through customs, that when they hit the street, we wouldn't just say, well, you made it to the street, so, you know, go ahead, we're fine. I think you would keep pursuing them, and we would certainly consider that a problem worth dealing with. Will a wall work? Or maybe the better question is it feasible? It works in some places. I mean, it works in San Diego. It does seem to work in El Paso. I don't really have a firm answer on that. I don't even have a strong opinion on that. I mean, I would have to talk to the people working on the border, the people that live down there in Texas and the other border states. You know, I'd want to know, you know, what's going on down there before this. And I frankly don't believe what I'm hearing from a lot of people. What I do know is that the people who want to immigrate here to the United States should come through some type of port, some port of entry, and then they should be recorded. I don't really understand why we would even be in a disagreement on that. Why wouldn't we want people to be registered so that they can work legally, so they can pay Social Security taxes, FICA, just as American workers do, to support the nation? I mean, we have costs that we have to pay for. There will be some in this room that say they already pay taxes. Well, my question is how? I mean,
You need to be a U.S. citizen or you need to be legal to work to get a Social Security number. We are just setting these folks up who have entered the country illegally up for indentured servitude. And I just don't understand why we would think that would be preferable. Sure, they'll be paid off the books. They'll get jobs and they'll pay them off the books. And some employers, they're going to tell these folks, hey, yeah, we're going to collect your Social Security because, you know, everybody pays it. And then they're just going to pocket that money. They'll work under threat of deportation. I see many illegal immigration advocates harken back to the days of Ellis Island. Yes, it was an island. It was a port of entry. You landed. You registered. You said, okay, I'm going here. I'm going to meet my family over here. And I already have a job lined up. And for the people that didn't qualify, we didn't allow them in. So, yes, let's harken back to the days of Ellis Island. You know, I've also been told that this is not a political resolution. That this is not a political resolution. But I ask, how can it not be? I didn't see these calls when President Obama deported 2.5 million people or housed unaccompanied minors in what are now being called detention camps. He saw illegal immigration as a problem, just as Charles Schumer did, just as Kirsten Gillibrand did, and pretty much every Democrat who is now running for president. They all saw this as a problem. But when President Trump came into office, that all changed. Now it's no longer a problem. And it goes, you know, a state of emergency goes beyond just using the military. You know, swine flu hit. It was a state of emergency in the United States. I don't think we deployed the military. We still are under a state of emergency in certain instances from past presidents. And yet, you know, we don't need the military for those things. Finally, I just want to say, in the last 2 weeks, I worked on ways to lift the natural gas moratorium in Lansing. I talked to constituents about how they're paying four times more for for propane and for heating oil than they are for natural gas, on ways to reimagine the Lansing Mall. You know, I went up, I saw Senator Schumer. He said he was going to push for more money at the airport. We met with my town about the affordable housing going up near Town Hall that they are getting some pushback on. We addressed some fears about the new drug rehab that's going up on North Tripphammer. We had to quell those fears. You know, I took, deserved flack about the new DOT site. I got calls from neighbors about that, and I had to talk to them about that. And I met with the salt mine about some of the permitting they're doing for the new shaft. Frankly, this is what my constituents hire me to do. Maybe yours do want you. I mean, I don't know your constituents. Maybe they do want you to pass resolutions condemning the president and the action that he takes. I don't know. But I do think that mine do expect that Tom Reed and they expect that Schumer and Gillibrand to take care of these other issues. And for me, I'm going to spend my time looking at these local issues that make Lansing and our county a better place to live, because, frankly, I just have a lot of work to do to make those problems better and to get the attention where I think it belongs, and that's on my town and the county. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Anna, Deborah, then Rich.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your words, Mike, for sure. I do want to address a few things. You sort of threw in everything in the kitchen sink on that one. Absolutely, you succeeded on this one. But I think that the point of this resolution is it's very, very specific about the declaration of a state of emergency. And all of us are in government. We all know that we work with very limited funding. The two things that we should always be asking ourselves are, is it necessary and is it effective? When you read the resolution, it specifically talks about the fact that most of the people who are coming through the border are coming through the actual ports of entry. Then what will be the impact of this wall versus the amount of money that we would spend on this wall versus doing other more cost-effective things to address immigration and the issues that many immigrants face that you brought up so eloquently in your speech. So I just want to keep this conversation narrow to the fact that we're specifically talking about whether or not this is legal and necessary, and I don't think it is because of the statements that were said. I would just lastly say that we could use a lot of this money instead of declaring a state of emergency actually to address many of the issues that you talk about immigrants facing, not being able to assimilate or not being able to find jobs or not being able to get ID, which is, you know, one of the resolutions that will be coming up in the next legislative session. So great ways to place this money instead of this specific declaration.
Deborah.
Well, I just want to reiterate that this resolution is not political in the sense of taking a position on how we should handle immigration. You're right, Mike. It's a really complicated problem. I don't presume to have the answers. I know that being an undocumented immigrant in this country sets you up to be screwed every time you turn around. And that's certainly not a situation we want to have continue. But this really isn't about immigration policy. It's about someone arrogating to themselves the power to circumvent Congress by using a national emergency that they claim requires military intervention, when in fact we have numerous law enforcement agencies that are already on the job and should be handling this so-called crisis. So we can have that discussion if it ever comes up that we have to pass an immigration law in Tompkins County. And, you know, all kidding aside, I don't think that's going to happen. But that's a conversation for another day, and it really doesn't have anything to do with this resolution.
Rich, then Annie, and then I want to take a turn.
Mike, I don't think we're that far apart in terms of having some humility about what we think should be done on the border. I'm not sure. And I certainly feel like we need a border. We need security at our border as part of keeping the people in the country safe. And people entering the country, we should know who they are. With that said, this whole emergency seems to be political symbolism. And I do agree with you that we seem to have foreign policy here more than we need, and we should be focused more on our local needs. But I'm struck by a poll I saw where it said that 33% of independents didn't see there was an emergency. 6% of Democrats said there's no emergency, or there is an emergency here. I'm sorry, 33% of independents said emergency, 6% of Democrats, 85% of Republicans said, yes, this is an emergency, justifying action. And so we're certainly looking at this event from a dramatically different perspective. And that's deeply troubling to me, that we can't see it in nearly the same way. And frankly, I think that's a symptom of what I term congressional collapse. We've been trying to do immigration reform in this country for decades now. And I will echo Annie's comment that thank you to the people who came in and spoke to us. You're speaking your mind. And it seems like everybody in the country is totally frustrated about immigration. That doesn't make it this an emergency or the best way to handle it. This does seem to be relitigating a congressional action on a budget issue. And it doesn't seem like it's going to end well. Even if the courts resolve it, well, they will probably resolve it one way or the other. The sides are drawn. I don't know how we get to a better place in talking about immigration. I'm going to vote for the resolution. Thank you for your work on putting it together.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment on the respects of if folks are here are against the state taking county sales tax money, or in other way, I guess a more a similar way would be the one person in the state, say the governor, saying we're going to come in and take county sales tax and use it for something else. Even if it's for local municipalities, you know, whatever it is, I think that's more of akin, if we're looking on a local level, something similar that we wouldn't want someone to do. And also, I would say that I don't see this as political myself, although I have certain views, but this is about us trusting the process. And just as, you know, here we might have different views on things, there's still a process for getting things done. Deborah has spent the time to do this and to get this in front of us. And I know sometimes in the past and today people question, well, what should we be voting on something like this? I appreciate you spending the time to get it in front of us. It's here, and I'd like to vote on it.
Thanks, Annie. I wanted to add, and Deborah, the other day I said something about, do you want that hour of your life back? And I just meant the hour maybe that it took to read the President's proclamation. It's clear you spent many more hours than one in writing and researching and writing this. And thank you very much for doing that. I agree, Annie, you're right. It's as if the governor just said, so he's proposing that the AIM funding come out of county sales tax. If the legislature says no, this is the same as the governor saying, it's an emergency, we're going to do it anyway. And that's not our system of government. And I really feel that is the core of the issue here. I think it's the core of the resolution. And in terms of where the money is coming from, we have military bases in New York State. And we heard a testimony at a hearing just the other day about housing on military bases and near military bases for military families. And the conditions described were appalling. Mold and mushrooms growing from walls and vermin and animals and these are the families of our service members. And so I would consider that an emergency. So it seems that that's where at least some of this money is coming from. And I think we do have a right and actually a responsibility to speak up about this. Thanks very much, Deborah, for pulling this together. Anybody else? I also want to thank all of you for voting to put it on the floor. I really appreciate the opportunity that we've had to have this debate. Thank you. Even whoever's going to vote against it, appreciate that. All right, ready to vote then? All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That is three opposed, and with our two not here, I can count. One, two, three. I'm sorry, what? You have the numbers?
Nine to three.
All right, that passes. Thank you all very much. Now, to go to Housing and Economic Development, Resolution I, Anna Kellis.
Yep, I have authorization to sell Tompkins County's Community Development Block Grant Loan portfolio and commit program income to the IF Airport Accessibility Improvements. And I'm going to emphasize accessibility improvements. And this is ID number 8406. I'd like to move it.
Thank you. Packet page 26, seconded by Deborah. Discussion.
So I just wanted to thank Megan McDonald, who put this entire packet together for us. I'm going to leave it up to her to answer any questions you have, but I just want to note that we are the only county, because of Megan's work and support of the county administrator, staff, and administrative office, the only county that has been able to recapture funding that we would have lost by state mandate. This is CDBG funding that we are required to send back to the state by March 31st. And because of an incredibly creative solution, we are going to recapture that funding and keep it locally, and specifically keep it for an initiative that will support ADA facilities or ADA additions to the airport. As someone who has people in my family that uses it for that exact reason, and myself, I am, you know, personally very thankful for this initiative. I would note that our initial attempt was to look for ways that this could be reinvested into housing, but because of the very strict New York State HCR guidelines, as well as the very tight timeline, we were not able to find something suitable to the state's definition and the state's approval. But it does also, they do include investments for initiatives that support the public and provide a public service. And so finding this was exceptional. And thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you very much, Annie.
I wanted to also thank Megan, for the all your work you did on this and the creativity. And also I wanted to thank INHS for stepping in to purchase our portfolio. So thank you.
Is there anything either of you would like to add? Because this really is a big deal, both sides of the transaction. All right, Megan McDonald, our Deputy Commissioner of Planning and Sustainability.
I'll just reiterate, this was definitely a team effort, and I think part of the reason that this was possible is a lot of creativity throughout the county and having a really strong nonprofit partner in INHS. This is a very unusual situation. It's not something that we sought. Again, this is all tying back to a state policy change. And so although it feels very unusual to take program income that's generated as home buyers repay their home loans and repurpose it for ADA improvements at a public facility, from the state's viewpoint, this is kind of the best solution, particularly given some of the geographic constraints that we have, that we can't use this money anywhere within city limits. We had some brainstorming about other housing initiatives and things like that. And so kind of making the best of the situation that we've got and hopefully still serving the local community. And also reducing the administrative costs, both for the county and for INHS, in years to come, where we would be looking at sending checks to Albany on a monthly basis for what may be decades if we take no action and decide to just continue holding these loans. And finally, I just want to reiterate, if there are any concerns about impacts to the home buyers themselves, that for the vast majority of them, apart from getting a letter notifying them of this transaction, their day-to-day experience with their loans will not be different in any way. And in fact, the few loans that the county was servicing directly, I think those homeowners will actually be even better served by being directly connected with INHS, so that INHS will be aware if they're struggling at any point with loan payments or things like that, and can reach out with the services that they have and the capacity they have that the county really does not, to help counsel and help people be very successful in these home purchases, so that they do provide the financial stability that we hope for.
Thank you so much, Megan. And this was really a gut check moment back in the summer when you realized what was going on. The first person in New York State to realize what was happening with the program income funds. Johanna Anderson, Executive Director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, would like to hear from you as well.
Well, I will be brief because I think Megan really put it quite well. This was definitely a Herculean task. None of us saw it coming, and I'm really appreciative to have such a great team in the county that we were able to continuously meet and keep trying to find a solution for this that really would make sure that we're advancing our mission and making sure that money that was invested in Tompkins County will actually stay in Tompkins County. So we're very grateful for that.
Thank you, Johanna. And kudos to Rick Snyder, who identified the Bonadio Group when we were looking hard for any sort of a firm that would take a stab at valuing this odd portfolio. And it's it turned out well, and they worked under the strict deadline. So thanks, Rick. All right. Anything else? Ready to vote? All in favor of resolution? Aye. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you so very much. All right. So let's go back to committee reports. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting on February 21st, so in 2 days, here at 3:30. We will be having a presentation from the undersheriff on detection systems for people under the influence of drugs. So if you are suspected of drinking alcohol, there's fairly mechanical and chemical tests to determine whether alcohol is a factor, but we don't have similar machinery for drugs, and particularly with the potential of marijuana becoming legalized. This is a timely report, and it should be instructive to the committee. We also have an added addition to the public safety agenda I just wanted to mention. put forward by Legislator Kellis, and this is in support of some New York State legislation to allow the issuance of driver's licenses to New York State residents regardless of immigration status. So see, we're doing immigration at public safety too. Although this is a little bit more functional, and I think we're going to have a report from our sheriff on this subject as well, and perhaps some of the other staff from the county, such as the county clerk maybe, or probation, and the district attorney I invited. So we should have a good discussion on this, and if we determine we're ready to vote, we will vote on it. But it's late to the game, so we'll have to be comfortable. That's my report.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Rich? Thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
We have not met since our last legislative meeting. Our upcoming meeting will be Friday morning, March 1st at 9 a.m.
Thank you. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
FNI also has not met since the last ledge meeting, and we will be meeting the 21st, Thursday, at 1 o'clock in East Chamber.
Thank you, Dave. Jason?
Just to let the legislature know, we'll be doing an update on the North Tioga Street property review at that meeting.
And thank you, Dave, for accepting the topic that I asked you to look into about the signs for this building, signs on the COFA building, and also on the COFA building. We had talked some years ago about a commemorative plaque that because we believe that site was part of the Underground Railroad. And I know that Arell is going to be talking about that, and thank you for adding that to the agenda.
In addition to adding that, we also added a discussion of topics that our committee wants to go with for the year, try to come up with reasonable solutions to.
Thanks very much, Dave. Any questions or comments for Dave? All right, Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We met on February 7th. We talked about goals, just as we're going to be doing in F&I. Among them, we looked at trying to get through our policies, and Lisa Holmes has been working very hard with us on that. We're hoping to have a goal of trying to get through a third of the policies that have not been done. There's 90-plus of them that we're going to start with some of the ones as recommended by Lisa that haven't been done for quite a few years. And so we're going to be going on with them. So if we get through a third of them, we will have done a pile of work this year on that. We began talking about the census, which will be happening in 2020, and what we're going to be needing to recommend for that, including whether we should have a full count committee. That went on to the discussion about what could happen to us for redistricting if the change in the election calendar happens, or is happening, I should say, that was reported to us at the meeting by our commissioners of election, Elizabeth Cree and Steve DeWitt, by moving the unified primary back to June and the requirement of commencing petitioning for candidacies probably back into March. It may give us trouble for the period of time we're going to need to redistrict this legislature in 2021. But we've asked Jonathan to look at that. We've asked Greg Potter, who has worked on the redistricting in the past two times, to look at that for us. So stay tuned. And as I say, the elections is a big change. Jason mentioned the possible need for these expensive electronic books. We're talking about 9 days of early voting before the elections, not before the primaries this year, but probably in the future, but just before the general election. They're thinking of doing two full weekends, or they're going to require two full weekends, Monday through Friday and weekends. And we'll have to staff those and we will have to be able to figure out, do we have everybody go to, say, if there are two sites, can anybody go to either of those sites, or are we going to have half of the county go to one site, half of the county go to another site? So stay tuned on that one, too. It's something that we've got to figure out. We talked a little about the climate survey. No, I'm sorry, that's budget. I'll get that in my next report.
Thank you, Mike. I have a question. So I heard we hear the number 50,000, one early voting site for 50,000. Is that residents or registered voters? Because obviously if it's registered voters, we would just need one, I assume.
I don't think we've got 100,000 registered voters.
No, right. It's based on population? So we think that would probably be two for us then.
That's what the commissioners were talking about, is two sites.
Okay. All right, thank you. You want to go through your resolutions then? Or any questions for Mike on any of that? Okay, go ahead, Mike.
I have Resolution E, the appropriation from contingent fund terminal pay assessment, and that's ID 8383. I move it.
Seconded by Deborah. Any discussion? It's a short form roll call.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Are there any noes? That's unanimous.
Resolution F, adopting local law number A of 2019, amending the county charter, section C-30.02, providing for the appointment of the director of the Tompkins County Veterans Service Agency by the Tompkins County Administrator. That's ID 8341.
And seconded by Shauna. Mike.
This is what we just had a public hearing on. We didn't have any comments, although the last two meetings we've had comments from folks from the community very interested in moving the appointment of a veteran service officer forward. And this will help us do that by making a change in the charter, which simply allows a smoother way forward to finding that person through the regular appointment process under the county administrator, rather than coming directly to the legislature, and it would take a lot longer to try to figure that out and make the appointment. And I do want to remind people that as important as this is, we made the decision to do this in budget. It's not as if we've ignored veterans over the years. We were the location of a New York State Veterans Service official for many years, and they pulled out from us. And when they pulled out, then they said, oh, by the way, this is New York State I'm talking about, by the way, you have to have a veteran service officer. So that's why we are moving forward with this. And I hope we find a person who will be, I've used the term crackerjack, because we need to have a person who will do things like education initiatives and helping veterans apply for various benefits, helping the medical needs of our veterans. So if we're going to do it, we want to do it right.
Thanks very much, Mike. Anybody else? Mike Sigler.
I just have a question. Is this going to be a civil service position? Is it, I don't, no, it's not competitive. It'll be a non-competitive position.
I was going to ask, didn't you have to get that approval from the Civil Service Commission?
It's been applied for, but there wouldn't be any reason to expect it to be treated any different than any other position.
Okay.
Department head position.
Okay. Do we have to wait until we hear back from them to hire? No? Okay. Anything else? Any other comments or questions? All right. All in favor of Local Law A, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thanks so much.
G, authorizing transfer from the contingent fund for a feasibility study for purchase of real estate. This is ID 8391, and I so move.
Seconded by Anna.
This is basically transferring money that we needed from last year, the budget process, forward to pay the architects.
Correct. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Are there any noes? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you.
And H is the implementation of a public administration management fellowship program. That's ID 8392, and I move it.
Seconded by Rich. Discussion?
We'll be moving forward with one fellow at this point.
Correct.
Jason, I had a question.
No, I don't know where they're going yet.
What?
I don't know where they're going yet. I thought it was going to be the space.
Oh, no, no, where they're going to sit? Yeah. Like right there, right?
We haven't figured it out yet.
Okay, yeah. This resolution sort of reads as if we're just moving the money. Is it we're actually doing it, right? I mean,
yes, you already have the position created, but now you need to move the funding to do so.
Okay. So there's nothing kind of left off by accident? It just kind of ends abruptly? Or
no,
that's okay?
I don't believe so.
Okay. All right. Anna?
I put an amended version in your packet. It's very minor, just clarification that the second, third, fourth.
You have to look on the back side. There's the money on the back side of the.
Okay. The sixth and seventh whereases refer to the responsibilities and the work plan for this person. So I just put wording in that made that a bit more explicit. That's all.
Okay. Is that friendly to Mike and Rich?
Yes.
Rich, you seconded, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's incorporated. Thanks, Anna.
You're welcome.
Anything else on this? All right. Short form roll call.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right. Thank you very much. And we have Resolution A. It was pulled off.
Oh, I have Resolution A?
Isn't that Gio? Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yes. Yes, I'm sorry. I pulled this off of off of the consent agenda. Want to thank legislator Mike Sigler, who brought to our attention that this didn't seem to be right the way it was worded. And we looked into it. The intention here is to have the succession of for the control of the legislature, the leadership of the legislature. After the chair and vice chair, to be by seniority of the members here. And we have removed one of the whereases from the original resolution that talked about committees. And we have removed Dan Klein for third in the line here and moved Dave McKenna into that to have the proper seniority issue. Although Mike has offered to dual Dave about who would be there, who has more seniority. I'm not going to go any further than that. We could actually put all 14 of the legislators on this list if we wanted to, or I should say 12 after the chair and vice chair, but we just have always just done three.
We handicapped Dave because he was shorter.
Okay, not touching that one. Mike, don't you have to move the one that's on consent as the committee chair, and then somebody else can move this? Or
I can do that. All right. Kathy's shaking
her
head.
The boss is shaking her head.
I take my direction absolutely from the chair through the real leader over there, Kathy Coker.
Agree.
All right. I will move the original one and then ask for someone to move the changes.
All right. The original one, seconded by Rich. All right. Dan.
Version.
All right. Is that friendly to Mike and Rich?
Yes.
It is.
All right. Thank you very much. Got to do things the right way. All right. Any other discussion on this, on the revised resolution? Annie.
Since the people that would serve in succession, if need be, is based on seniority or tenure, could that be added in here? Because especially since you're only listing three people, worst case scenario, we have no way to decide to go past the three there. So could something be added?
It's a bad day.
Yeah,
that's a bad day.
It could be a snowy day back from Albany.
That's a rough one.
So What if, that's a fair point. So look at the whereas in that's crossed out. Do you want to suggest some language that does leave out a justification for this list?
Sure. Something along the lines of whereas the Government Operations Committee recommends that based on legislative tenure, now therefore be it.
That would be friendly.
Friendly.
Seems pretty simple. Okay. You got that, Kathy? All right. Great. All. Anything else? All in favor of the revised resolution A, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much.
I would just add, I've served on the legislature for 21 years. I've never seen anybody on this this list of succession take over a meeting when there wasn't the chair or the vice chair here. A couple of times they've been called upon to be aware that both the chair and the vice chair have been out of town, but as far as this happening, it just doesn't happen.
That's true. But now that you've said it, Mike.
Well, that's why we passed the resolution.
Right, okay.
I don't think I want to have the chair and vice chair in my car again, just in case.
All right. Now is the time when we usually take a brief recess, which we could do, or we could go through the reports, and we've already done that one resolution. All right, keep going. All right, Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
So we will have our first meeting next Monday at 1:30. Among the exciting discussions that will occur, Katie will be presenting the DPS 2019 draft work program to the extent that it covers areas within the committee's purview. We will be hearing from John Negley about the status of our hydrilla eradication efforts, which are sadly not successful so far. And in case anybody missed it, apparently Circular Energy is still trying to build an incinerator at the Seneca Army Depot. So thank goodness several senators and assembly people have reintroduced the bills from last year that would preclude that from happening. And I've added a resolution to our agenda that would support those efforts. And that's all I have so far.
All right. Thank you very much, Deborah. Any questions or comments? All right. Thank you. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we met on the 15th of February. We talked about our goals again. We're still distilling them with the help of our county administrator and staff. The county administration has put forward a draft budget schedule for us, which we're going to be talking about. The main thing I'd like folks to put on their calendar and to comment about if it's going to be a problem is the budget retreat, which would happen on April 30th, which is the fifth Tuesday in the month of April. So hopefully we don't have any meetings scheduled that day, and we'll be able to do that. So that's pretty important. The rest of the schedule is still a little bit in flux, but it's so far it's following pretty much what we did last year. We talked about the audit with Rick, and the audit will be in the same way we did it last year. The committee will act as a committee of the whole to do the audit process. I think it's in June when we do that, and bring the auditors in, and we'll have a little extended meeting to go over the report at that time. The Human Resources Department has been issued a report. They've been active. One of the things we've been trying to do is increase our focus on personnel issues this year. And Amy Guerri talked to us about the finalization of the blue-collar contract that she's been working on with her department and the collective bargaining things that are coming up. She told us a couple of things. I'll just mention one or two, that the Human Resources Department reviewed over 6,542 employment applications in 2018, which was a 14% increase over the previous year, and they conducted 108 civil service examinations. They performed 194 distinct recruitment efforts, 10 department head deputy positions. That was an increase of 42% over the previous year, and onboarded 116 new employees in addition to 88 JPTA, that's Workforce Temporary Seasonal Hires. They're also working on some projects in the Human Resources Department. They're trying to transition to a new workers' compensation, disability, and FMLA leave program vendor for software, and they're moving forward with upgrades to our new and enhanced online application system. We learned, it was quite interesting, that we were probably the first county in the state, Amy told us, that had an online application process like we do, and that her department had been the host to many other counties that had come in to see how we had put it together so that we could have this process to make it more accessible to more people to apply for the positions that we have available in county government to improve our efforts for workforce and diversity. Workforce diversity and inclusion, I should say. And Marshall Lynch talked to us about the efforts of the Public Information Advisory Committee and her efforts to increase our presence on social media. Take any questions? Other than that, I have a resolution.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Yeah, I have one. We passed Resolution D, and I just, the bylaws for the PIAB, and I just saw in my red folder the addition that was suggested by Anna Kellis. Now, I assume because we passed it only on the consent agenda with no discussion.
I thought that was manifest because it really wasn't changing what it said.
It was actually pulling from the previous bylaws, bringing it forward because it was in the previous bylaws.
Adding clarification. Okay, the point is that it is an article about membership, just to make this clear for people who might be watching, hi out there, that just a clarification that says there's no limit on number of terms that members of the Public Information Advisory Board can serve. So, all right, so that's incorporated in what we passed. Great, thank you. All right.
I'd like to move Resolution J, which we added to the agenda, a resolution opposing the proposed and amended 2020 executive state budget impacting aid and incentives to municipalities and county sales tax revenues. I do move that.
Second by Annie. Mike.
Jason gave us a little introduction to this, and I appreciated that. I want to thank him for his efforts in putting this resolution together. Martha and I both did some editing, but the drafting of it here was a lot of Jason's help. I would point out that the New York State Association of Counties, through Stephen Aquario, their executive director, has been pushing these same points that we're making to the state. We don't need to fund another state mandate out of county coffers, and that's what is being proposed by the governor's 30-day amendments. He wants us to take our internet sales tax money that we might get. Who knows? They're saying we're going to get it, but will it be enough to cover what they want us to pay to the towns and villages? I don't know. I'm thinking Rick could, if we asked Rick that, I don't think he'd be able to tell us whether we're going to get that money or more or what it is. So who gets stuck if it doesn't come up with that 300 and some thousand that Jason was talking about? Does that mean we just have to pull it out of additional county sales tax revenues from you know, retail sales or energy or whatever else we're doing. There's too many ifs here. It's not the right way to fund this. The AIM funding, which used to be called per capita aid for many years by the number of people, and they always have used very strange formulas. I can remember when I was serving in village government, they were using like 1960 census data because it was more beneficial to the cities than it was to the towns and villages back then. And even now, if you take the population of the city of Ithaca and divide it by the $2 million it receives in this AIM funding, compared to the 300,000, divided by their population, compared to the 300,000 divided to the population of everybody else in the county, it's the difference. I used to have those figures at the tip of my tongue, but I don't have them. I think it was like $6 per capita outside the city, and $30 or $40 per capita inside the city. So this has been unfair to towns and villages for a long time, and now it's going to be unfair to the county. So that's why I think it's great that we can move this forward if the rest of you support it.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Jason, for working on this on very short notice over the weekend. And I would point out that the total cut to towns and villages in Tompkins County is almost $400,000, which is almost a full percent on our tax rate. So, and the whole point of the internet sales tax was that we should be getting that sales tax for good reasons, that it levels the playing field with other retail operations, and not having it is a disadvantage to our brick-and-mortar stores and our local community. So there's a reason that that money is long overdue. So to just see it as some kind of windfall that can be cherry-picked and pulled away by the state of New York should not happen. So we'll gladly take this with us to Albany next week. Well, it'll get sent tomorrow morning. Usually Kathy gets them out really quickly. Maybe we can take it on yellow paper or something like that, red paper maybe, to hand off. Any other comments on this? Mike Sigler.
I mean, I'm of course going to support this. I don't know why this is being treated any different than any other sales tax, but I do feel the need to point out that while we always condemn state mandates, we should be more aware when we put them on ourselves. I don't mean to harp back to the $200,000 we're spending to study a state road, but as Martha just said, $400,000 is a lot of money. It's 1% on the tax. That's what we get in this county, and we're going to spend half of that money for 1 year to study a road that we aren't in control of. So, thank you.
Mike.
Since you brought it up, that's a one-time thing. This would be reoccurring every year. We would have to pay this to the towns and villages.
That's true. Anybody else? All right, ready to vote on Resolution K, please. No, that's the wrong. Resolution J. Please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mike. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, is there a vice chair? Anna Kellis.
Yeah, so we met on January 23rd. We did cover, review some of the accomplishments that we have had in the county with respect to workforce diversity and inclusion. I just wanted to give a sense of what these are because I think this is something we should be proud of. We do have an LGBTQ+ group that has been working for the last year with law enforcement to create a toolkit that would support LGBTQIA, both inmates in the jail as well as personnel, and that conversation is continuing. We had the Out Alliance training that many of you, I'm hoping all of you, participated in. That was hugely successful as far as participation from employees. And they're interested in doing a phase 2 of that training. So stay tuned for that.
The Diversity Consortium Roundtable will be coming up soon, and there are seats available on the Diversity Consortium of Tompkins County, and so people are encouraged to serve on that as a representative. There are applications. You can reach out to myself or Leslyn if you're interested. We did cover goals for this coming year. One of the things that has been discussed is the possibility of more closely supporting our human resources department in doing their work, as both in recruitment and retention support and exit interviews. Those would be continuing discussions about those. So that was on the a list on the agenda. A goal was also being proposed to bring back the Diversity and Inclusion Awards. We talked about drafting a diversity and inclusion plan. So we have put together a strategy, but we need an actual plan that is implementable. So that is something that we discussed reviewing this year with administration, and Jason in particular. Jason has been giving us a lot of reports about our county, the six contiguous counties, about the breakdown, diversity breakdown, as well as the diversity breakdown within our staff. And we can then use that information to evaluate what our goals are with respect to diversity and inclusion. It might not necessarily be that it's representative of what the diversity is in the county or the six contiguous counties. It could be that we are looking for what would feel inclusive and what would help retain an inclusive personnel. So there's a whole myriad of ways that we could look at that, and that's one of the things that that we talked about and will hopefully be talking about moving forward. So that's a bit of a summary, unless anybody else has any.
Thanks very much, Anne. I appreciate that. Any questions or comments? All right, thank you. And Housing and Economic Development, you have your resolution done, but if you have a report.
Yeah. We will be meeting next Thursday at 9:30 in the chambers. I've mentioned this before. We will have a presentation from Planning and the Department of Planning and Sustainability. They will be covering the work plan as it relates to housing and economic development. So as you all have obviously noticed at this point, the Planning Department will be supporting both committees. So those work plans will be split, those presentations will be split between the two committees. We also will be reviewing the 2015 strategic plan, specifically the sections related to housing and transportation. Those two will be big areas that we will be reviewing this year. And everybody on the committee should have read those by now or planning on reading those by next Thursday. And the other thing that we'll be discussing that was reading homework was the report that came out from DPS on the focus development areas. I thought it was an excellent report that came out a few years ago, and it will serve as a backbone for a lot of the discussions we'll be having with respect to housing in the committee. That's my report.
Thank you, Anna. Any questions or comments? Terrific. Thank you very much. We've got the minutes of the February 5th meeting. I get a motion. Moved by Deborah, second by Shauna. Any discussion, questions? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Can I get a motion to adjourn? That would be Annie and Anna. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you all. We're adjourned.